This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If Malawi will relax on this, it is going to set a bad precedent. And the pharmacy and the medicines regulatory authority will be too serious on the other pharmaceutical products.
That was George Joby, executive director of the Malawi Health Equity Network, on the government's decision to destroy more than 19,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccines that have passed their expiration date. Details coming up also. The corruption trial of former South African President Jacob Zuma has been postponed. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. South Africa's COVID-19 vaccine rollout is off to a shaky start, with plans to immunize the elderly over the next few weeks. Some vaccination sites haven't opened, and many who have registered for jabs haven't been instructed where to go. Almost 500,000 health sector workers got their shots over the past few months, but that was under a trial of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Darren Taylor reports.
A third wave of the pandemic has begun in South Africa, with infections and hospitalizations rising in the African nation hardest hit by COVID-19. Medical scientists like Dr. Joe Barnes are concerned that a poorly managed vaccine rollout will contribute to rising death rates.
If you have an unprotected population like we have, except for a small percentage of healthcare workers who got vaccinated already, a virus will wax and wane, up and down, up and down.
She says the government's become fixated on statistics instead of organizing a proper immunization program.
If you, rather than looking at the shape of a curve and chasing the data, apply disaster management principles, then if something is rising steeply, you start to act already, whether it hasn't.
Barnes, an epidemiologist, believes South Africa would have been in a much better position to confront a third wave if it had allowed the private sector to help procure vaccines.
I'm concerned about the system where vaccines are under full control and only the control of the government, and that the vaccine rollout seems to be to some degree micromanaged by the government, because there's an old truth that says if you take ownership of the entire system, you also take ownership of all the mistakes.
She's far from alone when she says one of those mistakes has been the government's failure to communicate to citizens how, when, and where they'll be able to get their jabs.
I'm pleading in a way for the government to not only release more information and take on board all of what scientists say, not only the pieces that are convenient, but also allow others to help. Even the vaccines that they sent on to Mid-Africa, sold on, could have helped some people, and it could have broken down some of the misinformation about vaccination that seems to abound in every country in the face of poor communication from the government.
South Africa's health department didn't respond to invitations to reply. In a somewhat confusing briefing to the nation on live TV last night, it insisted it was ready to run an efficient rollout. Some critics say signs of the chaos to come in the vaccination program were clear when only healthcare employees were supposed to get injected. Yet, in places across South Africa, people who weren't health workers turned up and were allowed to get jabs. Barnes has mixed feelings about this.
the fewer people there are that this virus can circulate around, the lower the rate of variants that are forming and the better we are at protecting. Indeed, we want a fair system, but to be obsessive about a fair system and then not getting the system going is, in my mind, worse.
She also disagrees with the state refusing to buy certain vaccines that aren't as effective in combating the variant dominant in South Africa.
We are at the moment in a sort of atmosphere where if we can't have it all, then we won't have anything. I don't think that is helpful at all.
Barnes is very concerned that the variant first found in India is now infecting growing numbers of people in the country. She says it seems to be even more infectious than the one in South Africa. Barnes says in a population that's largely unvaccinated, more infections equal more deaths. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The corruption trial of former South African President Jacob Zuma has been postponed until May 26th after his defense attorney raised concerns about the prosecutor. The trial was expected to start today. Zuma faces 16 charges of fraud, graft, and racketeering. The charge related to the 1919 purchase of fighter jets, patrol boats, and military gear from European companies for 30 billion rand, then the equivalent of nearly $5.0 billion. He is accused of accepting about 4 million rand in bribes. At the time, Zuma was deputy president to Thabo Mbeki. The case has been postponed numerous times by defense motions to have the charges dropped. The ruling African National Congress Party forced Zuma to resign in 2018 after 9 years as president because of a number of scandals. French and African leaders and international organizations are meeting today in Paris to negotiate debt relief and raise support for Sudan's transitional government. General Abdel Fattah Burhan, head of Sudan's ruling Sovereign Council, and Prime Minister Abdel Hamdok are there. The heads of state of neighboring Egypt and Ethiopia, the International Monetary Fund Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva, and African Union Commission Chairman Moussa Faki Mahamat also are attending. Sudan's transitional government, which was formed in 2019, wants to attract investors and secure pledges to pay off its arrears to the International Monetary Fund and then find the relief for at least $50 billion in external debt. Doing so would help it access new lending at lower cost. France today said it would grant a $1.5 billion bridge loan to help meet those goals. Malawi is expected to destroy over 19,000 expired doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine this week. They are part of 102,000 doses the country received in March from the African Union. Lamek Basina reports from Blantyre.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control has urged African countries not to destroy the COVID-19 vaccines, saying they are still safe to use despite their April 13 expiration date. But health authorities in Malawi say the move is in line with the country's protocols on the disposal of medicines and biologicals. Dr. Charles Mansambo is Malawi's Secretary of Health.
I don't dispute the fact that this medicine may be used after the 6 months, but procedure-wise and regulatory-wise, it's not correct to proceed the route they're suggesting, because these were registered based on the information they provided to the regulatory authorities. And for this COVAX vaccine, the registered duration that they said was going to last for was 6 months.
Mansambo also said people would be discouraged from getting a jab if the government uses expired vaccines.
And there's also the danger that, we started off well as a program in Malawi, but the moment people heard that there were some expired vaccines, most of them withdrew. There was some big hesitancy. So it would do us good if we regain this confidence from people that the vaccines we're giving them are actually good vaccines.
Mansambo said the expired vaccines will be disposed of publicly through incineration in the presence of members of the disposal committee, along with the Auditor General's Office, Treasury, and the Anti-Corruption Bureau. Health Ministry records show Malawi received a total of 512,000 donated doses in March, including 360,000 through COVAX facility, with an expiry date of June 27. A consignment of 50,000 from the Indian government expires in July. Another African country with expired COVID-19 vaccine is South Sudan. George Jobe, Executive Director of the Malawi Health Equity Network, commends Malawi for sticking to its regulations on the expired products.
If Malawi will relax on this, it is going to set a bad precedent. And the pharmacy and the medicines regulatory authority will be toothless on other pharmaceutical products.
Health Secretary Mansambo, however, said the country still has adequate stocks of COVID-19 vaccines. Lamik Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
World Health Organization officials report more than 1 billion people are affected by a group of neglected tropical diseases. They say these diseases often are overlooked by governments, and the situation has become worse because of disruption of NTD services by the current COVID-19 pandemic. Nevertheless, they say the WHO has a new roadmap which could lead to a significant reduction in the number of people needing treatment and the eventual eradication of two diseases. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Neglected tropical diseases affect 1.7 billion people globally. 40% are in Africa, a continent that encompasses most of the 10 high-burden countries in the world. Over the past decade, the World Health Organization reports great progress has been made in the treatment of many of these life-threatening and debilitating diseases. It notes 42 countries around the world have eliminated at least one disease. However, Muele Chele Malichela, director of WHO's Department of Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases, says she fears a lot of this good work could be undone because of the negative impact of COVID-19. She says the pandemic has caused disruptions and delays in NTD services. She says mass treatment campaigns, surveys of affected areas, and the transport and delivery of medicines have been interrupted.
All the efforts that have been done to control these neglected tropical diseases to bring about elimination in most of, in some of the countries will be reversed if the focus is not kept, a good focus on surveillance, a good focus on continued interventions in some of the countries which are nearing elimination.
WHO reports guinea worm disease is on the cusp of eradication, with only 27 human cases reported in six African countries last year. In 1986, about 3.5 million human cases occurred annually in 21 countries in Africa and Asia. WHO says yaws, a chronic skin infection, is a disease that can be eradicated in the Indian subcontinent. Malichela cites several other success stories.
In terms of elimination of trachoma, we have Morocco, we have Ghana, and more recently we have Gambia. We have the elimination of lymphatic filariasis in Togo and in Malawi. In Yemen, which is, you know, outside Africa in the Middle East, they have eliminated lymphatic filariasis under very difficult conditions, but they've managed to do it. And that's, you know, very impressive feat.
At the end of January, WHO formally launched a new roadmap aimed at driving progress toward a world free of NTDs by 2030. Health officials consider the roadmap a key piece in ensuring countries build back better after COVID-19 by focusing on resilience and strengthening health systems. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
UN agencies are urging policymakers to lower speed limits in a bid to cut traffic deaths and injuries. A campaign to get people to slow down on the roads will be launched Monday at the start of the United Nations Global Road Safety Week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Every year, more than 1.3 million people die in road traffic crashes and 50 million are injured. One person dies every 24 seconds because of a crash. The United Nations says car crash injuries are the eighth leading cause of death globally for all age groups. It is also the leading cause of death among children and young adults between the ages of 5 and 29. The focus of this year's Global Road Safety Week is to encourage policymakers to drop speed limits to 30 kilometers an hour in cities where cyclists and pedestrians interact closely with car traffic. The head of security and mobility at the World Health Organization, Nan Tran, says reducing the speed limit to 30 kilometers per hour in city streets will save lives.
Most people, most cyclists, pedestrians will survive if they're hit by a car traveling at 30 kilometers per hour or 20 miles per hour. Beyond that speed limit, the risk of death becomes much higher. And that's why we consider 30 kilometers per hour or 20 miles per hour a safe speed, because it means that most people will survive.
Slower speed, he says, has other benefits in making cities more livable. Tran notes cars are a big source of carbon dioxide emissions. He says slower speed will result in a significant drop in emissions, which will improve air quality. Since early last year, he says COVID-19 lockdowns and an increase in the number of people working from home has led to a marked decrease in the number of people driving. However, he adds, this has not resulted in fewer traffic deaths.
In fact, although we have observed a reduction in the amount of traffic and, in fact, in the amount of crashes, what we have seen is that there has been an increase in the severity of crashes because the roads have been empty due to confinement and lockdown, and people have taken that as an opportunity to actually speed, and they're taking this opportunity to drive faster, and therefore you're seeing more fatal crashes.
The WHO reports Africa is the region with the highest number of road traffic fatalities in the world, with a rate of about 26 per 100,000 population. This against 10 fatalities per 100,000 in the Europe region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The inaugural Basketball Africa League, BAL, championships kicked off yesterday in Kigali, Rwanda. The Rwandan home team, the Patriots, got off to a great start Sunday with an 83-60 win over Nigeria's Rivers Hoopers in the opening game of the 12-team tournament. American Brandon Costner scored a game-high 20 points for the Patriots, while British-born Rwandan professional Prince Ibe registered 11 points. Former Cleveland Cavaliers point guard Ben Uzo led scoring for Rivers Hoopers with 15 points. Three games are on the schedule today in Kigali. GS Petroliers of Algeria will play AS Douance of Senegal. Ferroviario de Maputo of Mozambique will meet Zamalek of Egypt. And in the last game of the day, GNBC of Madagascar faces U.S. Monastir of Tunisia. 12 teams from across Africa are competing in the championships. The BAL is a partnership between the U.S. National Basketball Association and FIBA, the International Basketball Federation. VOA is a radio broadcasting partner for the BAL, and you can follow the action on VOA Africa, voanews.com, and the BAL.com. African entrepreneurs are creating innovations that help farmers improve their yields. In Ghana, Sesi Technologies, the company behind GrainMate, allows farmers and grain purchasers to affordably measure moisture levels of maize, rice, wheat, millet, sorghum, and other staples. Africa's 54's technology correspondent Paul Ndiho spoke via Skype with Isaac Sesi, a Ghanaian entrepreneur and CEO of Sesi Technologies.
Isaac Sesi, welcome to Africa 54.
Thank you very much, Paul.
You built an incredible technology that has helped a lot of farmers across Ghana and across Africa to figure out how to manage their yields, to manage their crops. Let's start there.
Yes, we built a technology to help reduce post-harvest losses in grains among farmers. And this technology is called GrainMate, Grain Moisture Meter, which is a simple moisture meter that makes it possible for anyone that works with grains to measure the moisture content in their grains before storage so they can reduce losses. You know, just being able to know the moisture content in your grains can be the difference between your grains growing moldy and you losing all of your harvest, and you being able to store for long and reap the benefits of storing for long.
Why agriculture? There are so many other places that you could have gone, but you chose to go into agriculture.
Both my parents are farmers. You know, I have been close to the food value chain. I've been really excited about being able to grow things in the soil and see it come up. And I have also been in the space of seeing farmers work so hard, and just something small takes away all of their produce, and then the hardship that results from that happening. And so I realized that one of the ways I could apply my knowledge and my skills in technology in a way that was fundamental to human beings is in the field of agriculture, because every one of us eats, and half of the continent is employed in agriculture, which means that if you're solving problems in agriculture, you can reach so many people and you can impact lives at a very fundamental level.
Have you been able to scale beyond Ghana?
Already we have partners that we're working with in Kenya, in Zimbabwe, in Rwanda, and in Nigeria that are going to be our partners to scale this technology in these countries. Already we have units that are in use in Zimbabwe, in Kenya, and in Rwanda. So the problems that we face, or the problems smallholder farmers face in Ghana, are similar to the problems that are faced by farmers in different parts of sub-Saharan Africa. So this is a solution that can work outside of Ghana as well as in Ghana.
When I've talked to a lot of farmers, either small-scale farmers or commercial farmers, they have a wide range of challenges that they face on a daily, day-to-day basis. How has your technology helped them improve their products or get better yields at the end of a harvest season?
It's true that smallholder farmers actually face a lot of challenges. In fact, it was something that we learned while working with the World Food Program for over a period of 1 year. So we came back and then we said, what can we do to solve more problems? Because we realized that we could only make the maximum impact if we're providing a holistic solution. And then we developed a suite of post-harvest management technologies that really helps them right from the drying, threshing, storage, even to the point of marketing. And we've put all this together in a package called Farmer Pack, which we are delivering to the farmers. So we have been able to sort of solve a lot of their problems. And the exciting thing is that we're presenting this solution in a way that they can pay for. So they, instead of having to pay cash, which is one of the major barriers to the adoption of technology services, they can give us grains in exchange for the package of, you know, solutions that we are providing them. And the response and the reception has been incredible.
When it comes to funding, are you looking for potential investors from maybe people who are looking at your product and they're saying, we want to be part of this?
So we're looking for investors. We're looking to raise $500,000 to scale our production, to scale our product development and our marketing and distribution. We've been actively reaching out to investors, and our doors are also open for anybody who believes that we can partner to create value for everybody involved.
That was Africa 54 STEC correspondent Poland Diho speaking with Isaac Sessi, CEO of Sessi Technologies in Tankoredi, Ghana. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.